Arachne was a maiden who became famous throughout Greece, though she was neither well-born nor beautiful, and came from no great city. She lived in an obscure little village, and her father was a humble dyer of wool. In this he was very skillful, producing many varied shades, while above all he was famous for the clear, bright scarlet which is made from the shellfish, and which was the most glorious of all the colors used in ancient Greece. Even more skillful than her father was Arachne. It was her task to spin the fleecy wool into a fine, soft thread, and to weave it into the cloth on the high standing loom within the cottage. Arachne was small and pale from much working. Her eyes were light brown and her hair was a dusty brown, yet she was quick and graceful, and her fingers, roughened as they were, went so fast that it was hard to follow their flickering movements. So soft and even was her thread, so fine her cloth, so gorgeous her embroidery, that soon her products were known all over Greece. No one had ever seen the like of them before. At last, Arachne's fame became so great that people used to come far and wide to watch her working. Even the graceful nymphs would steal in from the stream or forest and peep shyly through the dark doorway, watching in wonder as the white arms of Arachne as she stood at the loom and threw the shuttle from hand to hand between the hanging threads, or drew out the long wool, fine as a hair, from the distaff as she sat spinning. Surely Athena herself must have taught her. People would murmur to one another. Who else could know the secret of such marvelous skill? Arachne was used to being wondered at, and she was immensely proud of the skill that had brought so many people to look on her. Praise was all she lived for, and it displeased her greatly that people should think anyone, even a goddess, could teach her anything. Therefore, when she heard them murmur, she would stop her work and turn around indignantly to say, "With my own 10 fingers I gained this skill, and by hard practice from early morning till night. I never had time to stand looking at you people do while another maiden worked. Nor if I had would I give Athena credit because the girl was more skillful than I. As for Athena's weaving, how could there be finer cloth or more beautiful embroidery than mine? If Athena herself were to come down to compete with me, she could do no better than I." One day, when Arachne turned round with such words, an old woman answered her, a gray old woman, bent and very poor, who stood leaning at a staff and peering at Arachne amid the crowd of onlookers. "Reckless girl," she said, "how dare you claim yourself to be equal to the immortal gods themselves? I am an old woman and have seen much. Take my advice and ask pardon of Athena for your words. Rest content with the fame of being the best spinner and weaver that mortal eyes have ever beheld." "Stupid old woman," said Arachne indignantly, "who gave you a right to speak in this way to me? It is easy to see that you were never good for anything in your day, or you would not come here in poverty and rags to gaze at my skill. If Athena resents my words, then let her answer them herself. I have challenged her to a contest, but she, of course, will not come. It is easy for the gods to avoid matching their skill with that of men." At these words, the old woman threw down her staff and stood erect. The wondering onlookers saw her grow tall and fair and stand clad in long robes of dazzling white. They were terribly afraid as they realized that they stood in the presence of Athena. Arachne herself flushed red for a moment, for she had never really believed that the goddess would hear her. Before the group that was gathered there, she would not give in. So pressing her pale lips together in obstinacy and pride, she led the goddess to one of the great looms and set herself before the other. Without a word, both began to thread the long woolen strands that hang from the rollers, and between which the shuttle moves back and forth. Many skeins they heaped beside them to use, bleached white and gold and scarlet, and other shades varied as the rainbow. Arachne had never thought of giving credit for her success to her father's skill in dyeing, though in actual truth the colors were as remarkable as the cloth itself. Soon there was no sound of the room but the breathing of the onlookers, the whirring of the shuttles, and the creaking of the wooden frames as each pressed the thread up into place, or tightened the pegs by which the whole was held straight. The excited crowd in the doorway began to see that the skill of both in truth was very nearly equal. But that, however, the cloth might turn out, the goddess was the quicker of the two. A pattern of many pictures was growing on her loom. There was a border of twined branches on the olive, Athena's favorite tree, while in the middle figures began to appear. As they looked at the glowing colors, the spectators realized that Athena was weaving into a pattern a last warning to Arachne. The central figure was the goddess herself competing with Poseidon for possession of the city of Athens. But in the four corners were mortals who had tried to strive with the gods, and pictures of the awful fate that had overtaken them. The goddess ended a little before Arachne and stood back from her marvelous work to see what the maiden was doing. Never before had Arachne been matched against anyone whose skill was equal, or even nearly equal, to her own. As she stole glances from time to time at Athena, and saw the goddess working swiftly, calmly, and always a little faster than herself, she became angry instead of frightened, and an evil thought came into her head. Thus, as Athena stepped back a pace to watch Arachne finishing her work, she saw that the maiden had taken for her design a pattern of scenes which showed evil or unworthy actions of the gods, how they had deceived fair maidens, resorted to trickery, and appeared on earth from time to time in the form of poor and humble people. When the goddess saw this insult glowing in bright colors on Arachne's loom, she did not wait while the cloth was judged, but stepped forward, her gray eyes blazing with anger, and tore Arachne's work across. Then she struck Arachne in the face. Arachne stood there a moment, struggling with anger, fear, and pride. "I will not live under this insult," she cried, and seizing a rope from the wall, she made herself a noose and would have hanged herself. The goddess touched the rope and touched the maiden. "Live on, wicked girl," she said. "Live on and spin, both you and your descendants. When men look at you, they may remember that it is not wise to strive with Athena." At that, the body of Arachne shriveled up, and her legs grew tiny, spindly, and distorted. There, before the eyes of the spectators, hung a dusty brown spider and a slender thread. All spiders descend from Arachne, and as the Greeks watched her spinning her thread wonderfully fine, they remembered the contest with Athena and thought that it was not right for even the best of men to claim equality with the gods.